Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1088, Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 3. This is being recorded on September 17th of the year 2019. As the title indicates, we are examining the rise and victory, basically, of fascism around the world. And central to the analysis that we are presenting are a number of things. First and foremost, the Internet. Recall that in our series of programs about Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, or based on the book Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, we looked at the fact that the Internet was not some benevolent invention meant to free human beings up so that they could drink limitlessly at the fountain of truth. The Internet is a weapon. It grew out of a series of overlapping DARPA projects, which also gave rise to Agent Orange, fundamental principle upon which it was developed is counterinsurgency. The idea was to find out what people were thinking and what they wanted and what they wanted to do. And in For the Record, program number 1076, we took a look, a reprised look at the Cambridge Analytica affair and examined that in the context of both the counterinsurgency foundation of the Internet and also the counterinsurgency genesis of the Nazi Party under Adolf Hitler and the Nazi principle as enunciated by Hitler in his speech to the Industry Club of Dusseldorf in 1931, that democracy was counter-evolutionary because it allowed inferior beings to restructure the political landscape according to their own desires. And he felt that, and stated, that democracy was equivalent to communism. And Cambridge Analytica, the Mercer, Steve Bannon operation that operated so effectively on the Internet and social media on behalf of Donald Trump, had as its parent company the British counter-terror, counter-insurgency firm, SCL, and it ultimately, Cambridge Analytica, morphed into an anti-democracy operation. In addition to the fundamental role of the Internet and related technologies such as YouTube, social media, Facebook, et al., the common one is tempted to say ubiquitous, but the common theme of anti-immigrant sentiment. Fascism depends on demonizing an other. It depends on demonizing, quote, those people, unquote. And who those people are depends on the various, on the particular iteration or manifestation of fascism. But many types of fascism, including and especially fascism in the U.S. and in Europe, manifests an anti-immigrant stance. And that is something that has very strong historical roots, as we looked at in For the Record, program 1013. So the role of the Internet and related technologies in the ascent of fascism around the world, and the ideological principle or ruse, really, of manipulating anti-immigrant sentiment in order to mobilize public will or public sentiment on behalf of a fascist cause are front and center here. I'm going to begin with a degree of overlap with a very important article that we concluded our last program with. It is a New York Times article from August 11th of 2019 by Max Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, and Amanda Taub, How YouTube Radicalized Brazil. And it talks about the role of YouTube in the rise of Bolsonaro, in Brazil. And beyond that, the decisive role of YouTube and its algorithm, which recommends to viewers other videos of the type they have seen and thus winds up creating something of an ideological steamroller on behalf of Brazilian fascism. The role of YouTube in the rise of Jair Bolsonaro and Brazilian fascism is very important and central to an understanding of how the internet really could be called the fascist net under the circumstances. Two main aspects of this New York Times article that really go to the essence of the internet, in this case YouTube, as a marvelous vehicle for fascism, for the dissemination and creation of fascism. Bearing in mind the origin of the internet in the first place, again, it is a weapon. It is not intended to make life better. It is not intended to make life more convenient. It is not intended to make people more enlightened. It is a weapon. It is intended to hurt. It is intended to create harm. And it is a marvelous vehicle for the creation of fascism. And encapsulating that and illustrating that to a remarkable degree are the two main, I think, two of the main principles about how the YouTube and the internet actually led to the rise of Jair Bolsonaro in Italy. Again, from the New York Times of August 11th of 2019, the YouTube and internet combined created something that is known here as an ecosystem of hate. And the synergy between various YouTube videos that was generated by YouTube's algorithm and recommendation system has created, a fascist construct that is noted here as an ecosystem of hate. Reading from the article. As the far right rose, many of its leading voices had learned to weaponize their conspiracy videos, offering their vast audiences a target, people to blame. Eventually, the YouTube conspiracists turned their spotlight on Deborah Denise, D-I-N-I-Z, a women's rights activist whose abortion advocacy had long made her a target of the far right. Bernardo Kuster, K-U-M-O-U-T-S-T-E-R, not the German spelling here, a YouTube star whose homemade rants had won him 750,000 subscribers and an endorsement from Mr. Bolsonaro himself, again, the president of Brazil, accused Ms. Denise of involvement in the supposed Zika virus plots. As far-right and conspiracy channels began citing one another, YouTube's algorithmic recommendation system learned to string their videos together. however implausible any individual rumor might be on its own, joined together, they created the impression that dozens of disparate sources were revealing the same terrifying truth. Quote, "It feels like the connection is made by the viewer, but the connection is made by the system," unquote, Ms. Demise said. Threats of rape and torture filled Ms. Demise's phone and email. Some cited her daily routines. Many echoed claims from Mr. Kuster's videos, she said. Mr. Kuster gleefully mentioned, though never explicitly endorsed, the threats that kept him just within YouTube's rules. When the university where Ms. Demise taught received a warning that a gunman would shoot both her and her students as well, and the police said they could no longer guarantee her safety, she left Brazil. The Ruche icon of fascism is the fascus. That is the symbol, was the symbol of the Roman Republic, then co-opted by Mussolini. People may have seen that on the obverse of the old Mercury dimes. It is a bundle of sticks bound together with a leather thong and an axe head. And at a root psychosocial level, fascism could be thought of as bundle think. One takes strength and comfort and motivation from the inclusion of the individual and his or her ideology in the bundle. Fascism could be thought of as bundle think. And again, what this article has termed an ecosystem of hate goes to the very essence of fascism. Repeating again, as far-right and conspiracy channels began citing one another, YouTube's algorithmic recommendation system learned to string their videos together. However implausible any individual rumor might be on its own, joined together, they created the impression that dozens of disparate sources were revealing the same terrifying truth. Quote, "It feels like the connection is made by the viewer, but the connection is made by the system," Ms. Demise said. And note, eventually she was dismissed. Actually, it doesn't say she was dismissed, but when the police said they could no longer guarantee her safety, she left Brazil. Now, in addition to this ecosystem of hate, another area in which the internet in general, and in this case YouTube, goes to and is responsible in a fundamental way for the generation of fascism in the purest sense. And this part of the New York Times article is called "The Dictatorship of the Like." And it reads, by the way, São Paulo is the pronunciation of Sao Paulo, the way it is printed in English, S-A-O-P-A-U-L-O. It is the second largest city in Brazil. Ground zero for politics by YouTube may be the São Paulo headquarters of Movimento Brasil Livre, which formed to agitate for the 2016 impeachment of the left-wing president Dilma Rousseff. Its members trend young, middle class, right wing, and extremely online. Renan Arienan Santos, S-A-N-T-O-S, the group's national coordinator, gestured to a door marked the YouTube division and said, quote, "This is the heart of things." Inside, eight young men poked at editing software. One was stylizing an image of Benito Mussolini for a video arguing that fascism had wrongly been blamed on the right. The group's co-founder, a man-bunned, former rock guitarist named Pedro Deyrot, D-apostrophe-capital-E-Y-R-O-T, said, quote, "We have something here that we call the dictatorship of the like. Reality," he said, "is shaped by whatever message goes viral." Again, the group's co-founder, a man-bun former rock guitarist named Pedro Deyrot, said, "We have something here that we call the dictatorship of the like. Reality," he said, "is shaped by whatever message goes viral." Even as he spoke, a two-hour YouTube video was captivating the Brazilian nation, titled 1964, for the year of Brazil's military coup. It argued that the takeover had been necessary to save Brazil from communism. Mr. Dominguez, the teenager learning to play guitar, said the video persuaded him that his teachers had fabricated the horrors of military rule. Ms. Borges, B-O-R-G-E-S, the history teacher vilified on YouTube, said it brought back memories of military curfews, disappeared activists, and police beatings. Quote, "I don't think I've had my last beating," she said. Note here that what we're really looking at is walking the snake in Brazil, or walking the snake on YouTube. Well, it is a complete reconstruction of history and politics in a fictitious but very persuasive way. When you create the ecosystem of hate and when you have the dictatorship of the like, you can walk the snake. And serpents walk. The Nazis go underground, take control of the American mass opinion-forming mass media, and eventually create not only a Fourth Reich, but one in which the Third Reich is portrayed as just, heroic, and necessary. So when you see the dictatorship of the like and the YouTube division instead of the Black Arrow division, which was one of Mussolini's elite military units, we have the YouTube division. And instead of Benito Mussolini, we could think of perhaps as Benito Algorithmi or Benito YouTubini. And all kidding aside, this is a profound technology, and the importance of this could not be exaggerated.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Turning to India from Brazil, we have spoken at great length in the past of Narendra Modi, who has now been reelected in India, and his RSS and its political cat's paw, the BJP, his party, are a Hindutva fascist organization that was modeled after Mussolini's black shirts and networked with the Third Reich, among others. And Narendra Modi, in addition to his Hindutva fascism, in which Muslims are demonized, has been fused with Bosean revisionism, and Subhas Chandra Bose, a prominent Indian fascist who fought with both the Nazis in Europe and with the Japanese in the Pacific, and who was so prominent in the pantheon of international fascism, that he got face time with and networked with Adolf Hitler, Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler, Benito Mussolini, the Emperor of Japan, and Prime Minister General Hideki Tojo of Japan. Subhas Chandra Bose is being portrayed as the real author of Indian independence, not Mahatma Gandhi. And we'll talk about some of the resonance between Bose and the driving force behind AOC, Sikat Chakrabarti, again in a minute. Bear in mind, in connection with not only Narendra Modi's rise in India, but also the rise of the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine. And we began this series 2 weeks ago with discussion of Ukraine, that Pierre Omidyar of The Intercept fame has worked not only with U.S. intelligence to help bring the OUNB successor fascists to power in Ukraine, but he also helped to finance the rise of Narendra Modi in India, and one of the individuals with whom he worked in India was a guy named Roy Plosterman, and the Rural Development Institute, which had a genesis with the Phoenix program in Vietnam. And Narendra Modi, too, in addition to the primary role of tech in not only his ascension, but also, as we looked at in 1074, the fundamental role of Facebook and other internet technologies in the assembling of power by Narendra Modi. Narendra Modi is also sounding the anti-immigrant theme in order to solidify his power. From The Guardian of September 8th of 2019, "Not a single illegal immigrant will stay," says India, after Assam Register excludes millions. Assam is ASSAM, one of the provinces or one of the states in India. India's Home Affairs Minister has said his government, quote, "will not allow a single illegal immigrant to stay," unquote, amid outcry over a citizenship register in Assam that could leave almost 2 million people stateless. The comment was made by Amit Shah during a visit to the border state. The Home Affairs Ministry, paraphrasing Shah's speech, said he was satisfied with the, quote, "timely completion of the process," unquote. Over the past 4 years, about 33 million people in Assam have been forced to prove that they are citizens by demonstrating that they have roots in the state dating to before March of 1971. Shah, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's right-hand man, has previously said India must act against, quote, "infiltrators who were eating the country like termites," unquote. Lawyers have raised serious concerns over the process, which they say has wrongly excluded people on the basis of minor clerical errors in decades-old documents. There are fears that Muslims, women, and the poorest communities could be the worst affected. Senior figures in the Hindu nationalist BJP had so far shied away from commenting on the list published on August 30th. Modi's government had backed the National Register of Citizens, or NRC, saying it was aimed at weeding out, quote, "foreign infiltrators," unquote. During his visit, Shah was expected to be urged by the local BJP leadership to pass legislation to protect the rights of people it says are genuine citizens excluded from the list. Again, note that Amit Shah has once again, or not once again, but has extended or utilized the anti-immigrant sentiment to mobilize on behalf of Narendra Modi's Hindutva fascist government in India. And in, for the record, 990 as well as 1,074. We took a look at the fact that Amit Shah was actually accused of murder and has strong links with Baba Ramdev. Now, the history of fascism and political assassination is something that we have looked at great length and many shows, and for the record, 969 and 970. We took a look at the May 15th incident, named after May 15th, 1932, when the Japanese patriotic and ultra-nationalist societies, specifically some military cadets from the native land-loving school, assassinated Japanese Prime Minister Kai Inukai. In Germany, there was a wave of political assassinations which not only dispatched the Marxist leadership of some of the Bolshevik uprisings in Germany, but also conservative social democrats such as Walter Rathenau, whose efforts as a primary minister of economics under the Kaiser in World War I, ironically enough, greatly alleviated the human suffering in the Kaiser's Germany that had been brought about by the very effective British naval blockade. That did not win Walter Rathenau, who was a Jew, any points with the Freikorps assassins who killed him as well. In the U.S., for example, Abraham Lincoln was murdered by the Confederate Secret Service, whose head, General Albert Pike, was the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan. Usually, Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest is described as the founder of the Klan. He was actually the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan. The other co-founder was, again, the aforementioned General Albert Pike, who was the head of military intelligence for the Confederacy, and it was Confederate intelligence acting through elements of Colonel John Mosby's guerrillas who murdered Abraham Lincoln. In the U.S., we've looked at the role of Nazis, both domestic and some of the Third Reich imports in the assassination of John Kennedy. In, for the record, 988 and 989, we took a look at the fundamental role of the RSS and elements that were to coalesce in the BJP in the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi. As discussed in a Washington Post story and in a Nation article, the assassin of Mahatma Gandhi, a RSS member named Nathuram, N-A-T-H-U-R-A-M, Godse, G-O-D-S-E, who was operating on behalf of a much larger conspiracy that was put together by V.D. Savarkar, the head of the RSS, was lionized as a hero and a patriot by a parliamentary candidate for the BJP. There is a Washington Post article by Joanna Slater from May 16th of 2019 called Indian Politician Calls the Man Who Killed Mahatma Gandhi a Patriot. It reads in part as follows. On Thursday, Pragya Singh Thakur, a parliamentary candidate from India's ruling BJP, said in response to a question from a reporter that Godse, quote, was, is, and will remain a patriot, unquote. Thakur's statement sparked a chorus of condemnation, but it accurately reflects the views of right-wing Hindu extremists. One fringe group celebrated the anniversary of Gandhi's death earlier this year. Thakur is perhaps the most controversial candidate contesting the elections. She is out on bail, and she faces trial on terrorism charges related to a blast in 2008 that killed six people and injured more than 100. She has denied the charges. Despite the charges, the BJP chose Thakur to run for a seat in Bhopal, the capital of the state of Madhya Pradesh. And there is also an article from The Nation magazine, in addition to a member of the BJP, citing the RSS assassin who led or was the point man for the RSS assassination team that killed Gandhi as a patriot and a hero. There is an article from The Nation magazine of May 21st of 2019 by Rushira, R-U-C-H-I-R-A, Gupta, G-U-P-T-A, that talks about Narendra Modi's Hindutva fascist political agenda. The title, A Modi Victory Puts India's 200 Million Muslims in Danger. And encapsulating this article, again from The Nation of May 21st of 2019, speaking again of Ms. Thakur, Thakur, like Modi himself, is a proponent of a far-right militant ideology called Hindutva, which was invented in the 1920s by an all-male vigilante group called the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh. Its founders corresponded with Adolf Hitler and met with Benito Mussolini in 1929 to model their party along fascist lines. A member of the group assassinated Mahatma Gandhi in 1948. Modi has shifted his rhetoric from fighting to corruption to generating hate. Under Modi, India hit its highest rate of unemployment in 45 years. A massive student and farmers movement grew, and Modi's government retaliated. Students and professors were falsely arrested, the press was muzzled, and members of the opposition were charged with corruption. One journalist, two writers, and a dissenting judge were killed. Skipping down. The lawyer representing the family of an 8-year-old Muslim girl who was allegedly raped by the caretaker of a Hindu temple was forced to withdraw after repeated threats and intimidation by BJP leaders. The father of a 17-year-old Dalit girl, the Dalits, D-A-L-I-T, are the Untouchables, who says a BJP leader raped her, was arrested on false charges, and died mysteriously in a police station. The simple truth, Modi is laying the foundation of a fascist Hindutva state, one that was first envisioned by the founders of the RSS. For democratically minded Indians, the stakes couldn't be higher. On one side is the legacy of Gandhi, and on the other is literally the legacy of those who assassinated Gandhi. Yes, indeed. Now, as we have seen in a number of shows, there is a powerful resonance between Indian fascism, both the Hindutva fascism of Narendra Modi, his BJP, and the RSS, for which the first two are cat's paws, and also Boesian revisionism, which is something to which the driving force behind AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a fellow named Sekhat Chakrabarty, apparently adheres. They have significant resonance in the American political scene, and in particular in the so-called progressive sector. Some listeners may wonder why I refer to the so-called progressive sector as the so-called progressive sector, the casual and frankly self-righteous ignorance and denial with which elements around Bernie Sanders or AOC respond to the obvious fact that Sanders Institute member Tulsi Gabbard, who placed Sanders' name in the nomination on the floor of the Democratic Convention in 2016, and who was bandied about as Sanders' prospective vice presidential candidate had he gotten the nomination. She is a left-cover Hindutva fascist. She is a member of the Hare Krishna cult, a fascist mind-control cult with strong roots in India, and Tulsi Gabbard was fundamental to arranging the details for Narendra Modi's 2015 triumphal American trip. She herself has strong links to the Hindutva milieu in the U.S., and she also sits on the board of directors of a Koch brothers-funded academic think tank. And as we have noted, the founder of Justice Democrats and the co-founder of Brand New Congress, two of the PACs that are fundamental to the rise of AOC, and a fellow who was AOC's campaign manager and her chief of staff. He has now resigned because of financial irregularities. That is Saikat Chakrabarty, who comes to AOC's candidacy, supposedly dedicated to weeding the influence of big money from politics, which is odd because Saikat Chakrabarty worked for Bridgewater Associates, the largest hedge fund in the world, whose general counsel was James Comey, who went from that position to being head of the FBI and was instrumental in his handling of the Hillary Clinton email non-scandal in the rise of Donald Trump. The Bridgewater Associates, also a major source of venture capital for Palantir, the Uber, the alpha predator of the electronic surveillance milieu, that is a major provider of electronic intelligence to ICE, which AOC has identified as the public enemy number one. In a YouTube video, Saikat Chakrabarty expounded at length, I should say, on the poor suffering Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a woman who basically has been elevated as a result of internet manipulation of her primary challenge to Joe Crowley, a woman who has a basically deceptive political resume. And Saikat Chakrabarty is an apparent political devotee of Subhas Chandra Bose, again nicknamed the Duce of Bengal after his idol Mussolini, whom he met in 1935 when he traveled to Italy to give Benito Mussolini a copy of his book. On the positive side of the ledger, the highest ranking American, Indian American politician is Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat of Fremont. Tulsi Gabbard, I guess, could be said to be she technically is Hindu. She is not of Indian extraction. She is a native of Hawaii and, again, a member of the Hare Krishna cult. But Ro Khanna, first name capital R-O, last name capital K-H-A-N-N-A, is a Democratic representative from Fremont, and he is of genuine Indian extraction. Indian Americans, by the way, not Native Americans, but Indian Americans, Americans of Indian extraction, are the second fastest growing minority group in the U.S. And Ro Khanna, to his great credit, has not only taken the lead in scoring U.S. support for the OUNB successor fascists in power in Ukraine, but has also been active in identifying the role of Hindutva, not only in imperiling Indian democracy, but in financing the careers of American politicians as well. And specifically, Tulsi Gabbard was one of the people that was so identified correctly. So,
you're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal. specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
From the San Jose Inside blog of September 3rd of 2019, op-ed, Ro Khanna rejects Hindutva, launches new debate for South Asian Americans. It reads in part as follows, skipping down. Congressman Ro Khanna, Democrat of Fremont, tweeted the following on August 29th. Quote, "It's the duty of every American politician of Hindu faith to stand for pluralism, reject Hindutva, and speak for equal rights for Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Buddhists, and Christians." Skipping down. Further, Narendra Modi and the Hindutva movement have set upon a path to influence U.S. policy from within the American political system, which brings us to recent events. Last month, Caravan published a long-form expose by South Asian analyst Peter Friedrich, F-R-I-E-D-R-I-C-H. The article sourced and detailed decades of Hindutva organizing in the U.S. and their development of political allies. At the top of that list is Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, also a candidate for the U.S. presidency, who has cultivated deep ties to the Hindutva movement. She attends their events in India and the U.S., solicits money from American Hindutva organizers, and even invited their leaders to her intimate wedding ceremony. As an apparent term of that bargain, she does not engage in criticism of the Indian government and often advocates its positions during U.S. policy debates. On August 12th, the author of the Caravan article tweet replied to a Gabbard campaign post, providing a link to the piece. Ro Khanna also replied, "The exchange is provided below." Khanna's statement was immediately recognized by South Asian politicos as a seismic shift in Indo-centric politics. He is the highest ranking American elected official of Indian origin, with a deep understanding of and connection to South Asian politics, and yet he stated in decisive moral terms that the dominant political ideology of India must be rejected as a matter of fundamental human rights. And again, Tulsi Gabbard is a member of the Sanders Institute. That's Sanders as in Bernie Sanders, a man I call brain-dead Bernie. The story of the Emperor's New Clothes applies to so many different things, and Sanders has been the beneficiary of some remarkably kind press in the so-called progressive sector. The man is an absolute idiot, and casual way that he has embraced people like Tulsi Gabbard or Jeffrey Sachs, the primary architect of the economic debacle that destroyed Russia, sent the Russian economy back to the Stone Age under Boris Yeltsin, is just remarkable. And again, Tulsi Gabbard termed the darling of the song, the darling of the RSS in the Indian press, and arguably the most important contact, a political contact, for the Hindutva fascists in the U.S., is not only a member of the Sanders Institute, but was his prospective vice presidential candidate. So, a tip of the hat to Ro Khanna. And again, in many shows, for the record, shows 1061 to 1068, called, in which I termed Socialists for Trump and Hitler, and in other shows as well, for the record, 1069, 70, and 71. We went into the ascension, or the ascent, I should say, of Boseian revisionism and the apparent affiliation with Subhas Chandra Bose and his milieu of Sekhat Chakrabarty. Note that the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, founded by prominent Indian fascist Subhas Chandra Bose in Hamburg, Germany in 1942, that had Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, the head of the Abwehr German military intelligence, as an advisor, is today the largest bilateral organization in Germany and is instrumental in channeling German professionals to the booming Indian high-tech business. Again, the role of high-tech, the internet, YouTube, Facebook, in the rise of fascism around the world is worth noting here. Sekhat Chakrabarty is no longer AOC's chief of staff, I don't believe. He certainly has shifted his focus. Now he's stumping on behalf of the Green New Deal, but once again he is promoting the squad, unquote. The team that is around AOC, and that I believe was specifically created to serve as an ideological punching bag by Team Trump, and that has served to divide Democrats and to basically brand the Democratic Party as an extremist leftist party with some extremely unpopular views. Again, Subhas Chandra Bose, acolyte Sekhat Chakrabarty, is no longer AOC's campaign manager, as far as chief of staff, but he is continuing his attempts at financing the subversion of the Democratic Party by dragging it as far to the left as is possible. I guess you could term the following the Dave Emery weight loss program. I'll say this for Sekhat Chakrabarty, or as I call him, Subhas Chandra Chakrabarty. He has a pair of stones on him, man. He's got some nerve. He sent out a fundraiser, for the Justice Democrats and the Green New Deal that specifically cites FDR's mobilization, in World War II against fascism. And for someone who wears T-shirts from a prominent Axis combatant like Subhas Chandra Bose, this is remarkable. Again, this could be considered the Dave Emery weight loss program, because if you read the following and if you have any political awareness at all, this will guaranteed to reduce appetite and calorie consumption and might very well cause you to puke. This solicitation via Justice Democrats was sent out by Sekhat Chakrabarty. I will read the text. Over the last few months, Justice Democrats and progressives in Congress have done something incredible. We have seized the attention of the Democratic Party and brought a Green New Deal to the forefront of our national discourse. It has not been easy. Every corner of the establishment has cried out that the Green New Deal is, quote, a nice organizing tactic, unquote, but claims that we need to revert back to, quote, what's possible, unquote. In their view, our ambition is merely fantasy. But that's only because they don't remember what we've been capable of before. This just makes me want to puke. I will say this. This guy has a pair of testicles on him, man. This, for a guy that wears Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirts, the following really is nervy as hell. In 1940, we stood on the precipice of a catastrophe, staring into the darkness presented by the rise of fascism. FDR saw what needed to be done, and called for the creation of an arsenal of democracy. 185,000 planes, 120,000 tanks, 55,000 anti-aircraft guns, and 18 million tons of merchant shipping. Hitler thought it was just American propaganda. CEOs, generals, business leaders, you name it, everyone believed it wasn't possible for a nation that had produced fewer than 3,000 planes just 1 year earlier to achieve global superpower status. They were all wrong. Through the power of our collective will, we blew past FDR's unrealistic goals and confronted the darkness of fascism together. We came together as a nation, and we achieved the impossible because that is what our reality demanded. And then he goes on to equate this with the challenge presented by global warming. I agree that it is a huge challenge and needs to be addressed. I fear it is already too late. But for this front-running fascist son of a bitch to cite FDR and the mobilization against fascism in World War II is really something else. And man, I'll tell you, there could have been no better use for those 185,000 planes, 120,000 tanks, 55,000 anti-aircraft guns than to blow Subhas Chandra Bose and everybody who believes in him from here to kingdom come. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. But then again, the team AOC are completely ahistorical, and their political viewpoint, sadly, hews back to the root technology of the Internet, generated for the purposes of counterinsurgency. Counterinsurgency was raison d'etre, as we saw in, for the record, 1075 of the Nazi Party in Germany. And sadly, I think that Internet technology and overlapping technologies, including and especially the cell phone and social media, are producing not only a dangerous form of ignorance, and as noted in that New York Times article about the role of YouTube in the rise of Brazilian fascism, an ecosystem of hate and a dictatorship of the like that works for the so-called progressive sector as well. The venality and self-righteousness of many of the people in the so-called progressive sector, including AOC herself, frankly, she is profoundly immature and very, very self-righteous, very self-absorbed individual. Most of what I knew about her I knew from reading. I've taken the time to watch some of her video presentations and some footage of her. Man, she is a really bad act. She gestures with her hands. She reminds me of no one so much as Kim Kardashian. She's like the Kim Kardashian of the radical left. AOC believes she glows in the dark. And sadly, I think that her shortcomings, which are enormous, and which she shares with many of her supporters, are endemic to the internet technology itself. When kids grow up, or young people grow up, with smartphones and social media and the glowing screens and 140 or 280 characters of Twitter, there is just no way they're going to have any kind of political or intellectual or historical depth. Sadly, I think that is true of AOC. And the ecosystem of hate that is manifested by the so-called progressive sector, or the internet component of the so-called progressive sector, which is very vicious and very self-righteous, I think, is fundamental to the internet. And the dictatorship of the like, I think, manifests in the so-called progressive sector as well. Again, as I have stated, although I don't think she herself is sinister, I think she is a tool created by the far right to specifically destabilize the Democratic Party and to serve as an ideological punching bag by Team Trump. And I think the internet and related technologies are fundamental here. Bear in mind that Sekat Chakraborty is part and parcel to internet technology. And bear in mind also the role of the DIG, the Deutsche Industriegesellschaft, in channeling German professionals into the Indian IT business, and the role of high tech in the ascent of Narendra Modi. In our next article, we're going to begin an examination of some of what is going on in Hong Kong. We're going to get to a discussion of what I believe is the destabilization of China in a future series. But note the following. This will be something of a teaser for material we will develop at greater length in our next show. This could be called Goose Hopping with Pepe the Frog in Hong Kong. From the New York Times of August 19th of 2019, Hong Kong protesters love Pepe the Frog. No, they're not alt-right. This by Daniel Victor. I would say this is wrong. They may not believe that they're alt-right, but I think very much like many of the well-meaning followers of people like AOC, young people who've grown up with smartphones and internet technology and social media et al., they have been led down the primrose path. Ask the Anti-Defamation League, and they will tell you Pepe the Frog is a hate symbol, a cheerleader of racism and anti-Semitism, a friend of alt-right extremists. The sad green frog is widely viewed as toxic across the world, a signal of a sinister and dangerous worldview. So it can be a bit jarring to see Pepe in his new role, a pro-democracy freedom fighter in the Hong Kong protests, siding with the people in their struggle against an authoritarian state. The protesters here hold signs with his image, use stickers of him in messaging apps and discussion forums, and even spray paint his face on walls. Well, they may not realize that they're all right, but the following, another New York Times article from July 20th of 2019 by Anna Swanson. A new Red Scare is reshaping Washington, and guess who is playing a major part in the anti-Chinese push? In a ballroom across from the Capitol building, an unlikely group of military hawks, populist crusaders, Chinese Muslim freedom fighters, parenthetically the Uyghurs, we'll talk more about them, and followers of the Falun Gong sect, more about them in our next show, has been meeting to warn anyone who will listen that China poses an existential threat to the U.S. that will not end until the Communist Party is overthrown. If the warnings sound straight out of the Cold War, they are. The Committee on the Present Danger, a long-defunct group that campaigned against the dangers of the Soviet Union in the 1970s and 1980s, has recently been revived with the help of Stephen K. Bannon, the president's former chief strategist, to warn against the dangers of China. So it is no surprise at all that the Hong Kong protesters are embracing Pepe the Frog. So in our next show, we're going to take a look at Falun Gong, and we're going to take a look at what part of what I believe is a destabilization effort against China. But we could think of Pepe the Frog as goose hopping in Hong Kong with Steve Bannon. This concludes today's program. This is For the Record, program number 1088, Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 3. This is being recorded on September 17th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.